the order of the Lord is ultimately fulfilled, because the order of the Lord can never not be fulfilled. It's always perfect and beyond any mundane impiety. So the Lord's order is always fulfilled. Another point here is that that if one actually enters into pure devotional service, which is free from jnana yoga, karma yoga, if one is fortunate to really engage in pure devotional service, then this is the perfect form of liberation, as mentioned in the previous verse. One tries to enter different types of, by being a yogi, or by being a jnani, by being a karmi, by practicing these different types of yoga. But as it is stated by Rupa Goswami, there's pure devotional service, which is far superior to jnana yoga, karma yoga, very, very far superior to all forms of yoga. So this is what happens when one can actually enter into pure devotional service. It's not that one doesn't satisfy one's relatives or one's forefathers in apparently mundane ways, but by being a devotee of Krishna, Krishna gives sarvasyaham, sarvasyataham, vidhi sannivishto. Krishna gives the internal instructions, the intelligence, how to go about fulfilling all obligations and desires, and all the different forces that one's obligated to. One gets the intelligence how to fulfill those desires by entering into pure devotional service. We have the example of Prabhupada in his life when he was in his last days. He spent many, many hours instructing his followers how to care for his family, how to provide for them, how to take various accounts out of his almira and fix them up so that they would be set up. So it's not that he was ignoring obligations, but Krishna was giving him direct intelligence how to fulfill all his obligations. So even though we have so many obligations to society, to our friends, to our relations, to our community, how to fulfill them, nobody knows, because the sense of what to do is not known by anyone, not correctly, not perfectly, unless one is a devotee of Krishna. Prabhupada once gave the example of the housewife who had a lover who was tending her husband more carefully, more attentively, because her mind was fixed on the lover. It was a bit of a gross example, but the idea is that if one is fixed on remembrance of Krishna, then one can fulfill all obligations, material obligations, very perfectly, very nicely. So Lord Shiva is praying for a daya or mercy from the Lord. Everyone needs the Lord's mercy, and if we become transparent enough to let that mercy flow through us, then we can fulfill all obligations and please the Supreme Lord. So I'll stop here. If you have any comments or questions.
It says curiosity killed the cat. So,
of course, doubt is also necessary. As Lord Kapila mentioned, it's one of the five principal components of intelligence: doubt, correct apprehension, misapprehension, memory, and sleep. So it's not that it's necessarily in and of itself an evil or bad. The Prophet also gave the example of the intelligent boy who took the watch apart to find out how it worked. He wanted to know how it worked. So, to try to, and in the Isha Upanishad it said that we should learn the science of nations along with the science of Krishna. So This is actually a symptom of being intelligent. That's why these great sages, they sometimes want to know, well, what is actually Maya? How does it work, and what is it? So, and the lesson is given by the Lord in different manifestations. Usually, it's a very kind of hard lesson, but this is what it looks like, this is what it feels like, and in the end, they realize that this is actually not what I wanted. I wanted to know, but there's a kind of punishment that goes with it if one becomes too doubtful or too curious. Even after instruction has been given, intelligent instruction, then we have this kind of syndrome of people who stay on the outside of pure devotional service, just like we have with our movement. We were talking about this the other day. It's growing, growing, growing. And Prabhupada said, oh, now our enemies will come out when this deprogramming phenomenon, the first appearance of a person phenomenon started to come out. And we see that this actually grows. So one way it's explained sometimes by materialists is there's a weather report, and if it's a, it'll say partly sunny, but it also means partly cloudy. So you can look at it in different ways. You can say it's partly sunny, and I'll say it's partly cloudy. Or someone's will say it's a nice day, and the person who's got sort of a negative attitude will say, yeah, but it's going to rain. And there's nothing you can argue with it, because it is partly cloudy, it is going to rain. But it's a matter of attitude. It's a matter of where we place our faith, ultimately. Do we place it in Krishna's ultimate rightness of what he says and what he guarantees? Jami Buddhi Yoga Land, if he says, I'll give you the intelligence, we accept that. Or are we going to continuously stay on the outside and say, well, you know, maybe he really won't. Maybe this will happen. Or, you know, maybe I have to experience more and more of Maya to understand what it is. And sometimes we as devotees, you know, we hear, but sometimes devotees fall into that trap of thinking, I've got to more deeply understand the workings of Maya to get involved very much in reading these papers, or maybe even enjoying material nature so that I can put better understanding of how it works. So as you're rightly pointing out, to be too curious or too doubtful or too speculative about, you know, it's a symptom of not having deep and complete faith, both in Krishna and also that Maya is ultimately not satisfactory. I think that Saval Sangharita in Bhagavan's classic, someone asked him before the Prabhupada, saying that the reason my movement is successful, he said, is that I'm convinced that there's nothing in this material world that can bring me happiness. There's nothing ultimately worthwhile within Maya to really embrace. So one has to be very convinced of that, but there's so much enjoyment in the material world, but none of it is, it's like so many zeros without it, without a one. Yeah. Really? This is a letter that Mahaprabhu sent him? Let me check on your Bible. Yeah, because when Prabhupada mentioned, he didn't give a reference. So this is really what gets me. Anything else? Sometimes in the past, people have said, I'm going to take sannyasa and leave a wife and children, nothing. So sometimes it's very wrongly construed that one can prematurely give everything up. But if we study the great sages carefully, and of course Prabhupada is the most immediate one that we have exposed to study, we can see what, even though he took sannyasa, what great care he took to see the obligation for all the people, especially for his family members. And other examples we can cite are how he was very meticulous in how devotees should manage his movement. I remember he was teaching bookkeeping to Jan Sundar. He was teaching them how to not miss a single penny. And he would write letters sometimes to an overseas bank and other banks. They would receive transfers of money from the United States, sometimes $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. And if they would make a mistake in the bank transfer, if they didn't credit the account in India for building projects, say in Bombay, they missed it by a few rupees or even a few trifles, he would personally write a letter. It was in the letters book, so he would have made an error in that account. Yeah, but six, I said 2 minutes, please correct this and make sure the records are straight and so on. So, he was very, very meticulous in making it seem that things are done right. Everything should look nice. The temple should be so spotlessly clean. I got one letter who said the floor should be like a mirror, otherwise you'll attract the rats. And people will be very impressed to want to come back. So this is a very important point, that sometimes by giving this verse, people get the impression that they can abandon everything. Of course, Lord Chaitanya was Krishna himself, and he had to undertake these hardships to preach. This is an exceptional case. And again, the philosophy of it is that one should be completely convinced that, as Rupa Goswami says, if you want to enjoy society, friendship, and love, don't even, he says, it's very dangerous to look at Govinda, because he will cause you to give up friendship, society, and love. But giving up means not prematurely or not artificially. For example, Dada Pandit took what was called Shaita Sannyas, which is kind of like Vanaprastha. And most of Lord Chaitanya's followers, most of the ones who did that, I think most of them, at least half of them, were householders. And Krishna consciousness spread in South India, where Lord Chaitanya spent most of his time teaching. Although he was the sannyasi, and there were a few other brahmacharis, but they were preaching in the Namhat program, where they were, like Kurma. Kurma wanted to give up everything, renounce his family. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, you go back to your village, preach to your family and friends, and make millions, thousands of devotees. And this was a system that formed into what we sometimes call cell teaching today. they would gather together, and they would chant, They would speak from the Bhagavatam, they would take the Shadam, they would speak philosophy to each other, they would chant together, they would instruct one another how to serve the devotees, they would engage in preaching activities, and they would become very, very convinced and fired up that this has to be conveyed, it has to be given to others in a very missionary spirit. So they would become empowered. That's the word probably they become empowered. And they would go to other villages and they would convince them to bring friends and family to come. And they would again create another little group and the whole village would become empowered. And this would mean people devotees. So it's not exactly to manipulate their souls, but they have to be very responsible also. But philosophically, we have to be convinced that the only lovable object is Krishna. And if one loves Krishna, then one can actually deal with everything else very nicely. One can love everybody, all things, all things, all things, all things, all things, all things. So philosophically, we have to be convinced that we have to repose our love in Krishna. At the same time, there's a tendency to think that we don't have to do anything. Just like the example that we were in. We have to tend to our mundane affairs very meticulously. That's part of the symptom of being a great devotee. Of course, in India and in times past, sages, and especially in India, even today, a sannyasi can go from door to door, and in a loincloth and wrinkled clothes, and just a stick with a little tied up bundle of goods on it, and people will respect and appreciate it. That's the main process of engaging in good work. In the with the Vairagya way of dealing, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, although he lived in India, he sometimes, when he would learn Chaturmas, he would mix it all in rice and beat it off the cement floor with his hands behind his back. He also sometimes rode in British cars. He had a very expensive British overcoat and turban on, and would serve the politicians and governors. To Westerners, he would intermingle very intimately. He would speak it and prepare it now as about philosophy. So it's according to, as Prabhupada said, utility is the principle. In this day and age, in this time and place, you have to dress like he did is almost the rule of the day. Be very presentable. Because people in this day and age are very superficial judges about how we vote and dress themselves. You know, the kind of words we're using to speak. How nice the books are, and the nice cover, printing is good. Prabhupada, you know, he made great effort to make these books look very perfect and beautiful. The ones in India had sometimes letters printed upside down, and then the old Bhagavatam, but he was upside down sometimes. But Prabhupada came with us, but he spent 10 years laboring to make the books perfect. Just because, you know, people are able to look. This is good paper. Are any of the things changed the way they look at poetry? I mean, that's what they look at. You know? Even though we know to us the poetry was very beautiful in those old Bhagavatam. Which books are like that? Well, most of the Prabhupada books, Bhagavatam, Kikini, Kikani, the Bhakti Rasamrita, the Samishvan, those are printed with very high quality. Some books that are printed in India, the devotees, they make them kind of cheap. I'm not sure. Well, some of the bindings. Yeah, I think there's a balance, as you say. I think the Bhagavatam, and then there's different people too. But, you know, some of them care more, like people that will buy a whole set of Bhagavatam and put them in their bookshelves. They will insist on very high quality books. There's other people that just, you know, want to read it, they're more interested in the content of the book. Trying to paperback this question for maybe some of the readers and just want to read it. And later on, if they're really serious, they'll want to treasure the book, they'll buy a higher direct edition and put it in their bookshelf. That's more, I think, like European, American, Australian, Japanese are more quality conscious. Whereas if you go into the so-called developing countries, they're always print books on lower quality. Because people aren't, they just don't care so much. They're not so. It's a bit superficial in one sense, there, in order to, you know, feel that you need to look closely. I mean, probably the majority of books are not written in English. I mean, consider Russian and Portuguese and Spanish. They all come from them. But I know I don't know if it's about, they started publishing books in Russia, in the Russian language. It was the first time that I think, almost, that any mass numbers of books were printed of that high quality. Isn't that correct? Large quantities of books in Russian, Russian and Russian-related languages were printed extremely high quality. And it required a big investment, and yet these books actually sold in millions. So, it's got one of the worst economies in the world. Prabhupada had a vision of how the books would look. He thought they'd have to have pictures because people, again, in this kind of world of the modern world, they're very, very enamored with art. In fact, when I was trying to get Prabhupada visa in America, it was one of the forms you could fill out, an immigration form. If the person had a special cultural contribution to the famous performing artist, the famous fine artist, they'd almost immediately get it. Exemption and be able to come to get an Indian passport and stay in America for unlimited amount of time. So this is part of the idea of filling books with beautiful pictures. So one thing is, even when there's cheaper paper, somehow you try to get a lot of good color pictures in there because people are completely in love with painting. They're thrilled to see these beautiful pictures. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jāi, Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki jāi, Śrīla Prabhupāda Centennial ki jāi, Swarga Giridhari ki jāi.